welcome to the Hearpy Media Podcast. I am the Leon that you need to install first, and then you can install the other Leons. And then save the load order. No, the other load order. There you go. Maybe just patch me first. I don't know. I don't know what to do here. And I'm joined by Frank. Frank, how are you doing?
Hello, Leon. I think in this case, I would be the left behind, not updated patch for some 3 years, but that is still just as important to make it all function properly.
Oh. And we have a special episode today. We have one of those concept episodes.
Yes. It's an episode that, in particular, I've been chatting with Leon about doing for a while now.
Yeah.
But we've been figuring out about, like, okay, how do we make this an episode? And when do we make this an episode, right? Like, when would be a good time for it? It seemed like a good time. So what are we talking about today, Leon?
We are talking about media in general, but a very special sort of media. A very video games related form of media. And I would argue, even those who are not interested in video games, this is still going to be interesting, I would argue.
Oh, yeah.
If you care about how media is produced and how community and individuals can interact with media in a fiercely unique way.
Yes.
We are talking about mods. There you go. Hey. Modifications. Modifications are things that you place into a video game, sort of, kind of. They are usually a thing only reserved for PC gamers.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the functionality of Windows software, in which you can manage and scrounge around in the computer files, if you will, the data files of the installed video game. You can apparently augment what is there. What a concept. Or can you? Anyway, we're going to try not to depict the history of modifications, but to pick a few very interesting mods that we find personally interesting and culturally interesting.
Yes.
I hope that they'll be entertaining.
No, for sure. It's going to be a reasonably... Again, this is a kind of primer that, you know, we're going to talk about some mods that we find most interesting, talk about it conceptually to some degree, and we can't escape some of it. The terrible relationships that, you know, some of these companies have had with mods and modders and modding. So, yeah, that's we can't escape that. But overall, we think this is one about this extremely weird experience that you as a player can not only just play, but you can add to the playing experience. It is akin to, like, oh yeah, it's definitely not akin to this. It's to really emphasize how incredible and weird and interesting this is. It's as if you are reading a book, you add a chapter to a book, not like an epilogue or something, no, it's like you add like some 3 or 4 chapters in the middle of it in different locations, and you add those chapters in for everyone, and everyone can read the book with those chapters in the way that the book functions regularly.
Yeah. It's really funny because I had the exact same example.
Nice.
I was like, it's like a book that you add a chapter of fan fiction into, and there you go. That was going to be my conceptualization of it. So, but yeah, exactly that.
Sometimes that's not enough. Sometimes you kind of rewrite the entire book in your own way, but you still need to have the old book to add the new book onto. It knows no comparison, really. Like, sure, we're talking about, you know, you add some chapters in, you add some fan fiction in, but, like, the fact that you add a fan fiction in between a book doesn't mean you're going to read the book differently. In some of these cases, it means you're playing a different game or playing the game entirely differently. It can completely alter that experience in a way that cannot happen and feasibly can't happen in any other media. Because sure, you may write some fan fiction and whatnot, but, like, you can't package it into the book, and like that would require you having the book file, separating the sections where you'd add the stuff and add the stuff in, but then you can't really distribute it, so to speak. Whereas for a video game, it takes some effort to do. But pretty much everyone can do it.
As much as I like this very tortured metaphor of ours, I do think people are now understanding it less and less as we go on.
No, that's fair.
I guess I just want to like cap that off with mods. In comparison to books, it would be... The goal is to not so much change the book as is, but rather your experience of the book.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a broad array of creativity and technical alteration going on here. And it can be something as simple as changing the font size, maybe, of your book.
Yeah, that's true.
It can also just change the cover art of the book. I don't know. Like, there's so many different ways that you can approach mods. And sure, we both thought about like adding fan fiction or adding writing to the book. And this is just, you know, always going to fall a bit flat because video games are such... I guess why I like video games is because they are such a protean... They are so protean in its character in every single way you can conceptualize video games. From the technical to the creative to the whatever. Yeah. And more so than I would say... I'm saying more so as if it's more impressive. It's not. But I'm just describing its uniqueness because I don't love music over video games. I don't love video games over movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so forth and so on. So we're not saying like, oh, it's the best art form because it can do this. No, that's not at all. This will never be that type of podcast. I'm sorry, dear listener. Or you're welcome. I don't know. But my point being here is that... I guess there are a couple other ways to conceptualize it. You could think of it as a remix of a song, for instance. But it's a more interesting phenomenon that I would like to kind of link to this as well is the recent interesting amount of, copyright expired properties like Winnie the Pooh and the Rat from Disney. It's like when Winnie the Pooh
The Great Gatsby.
Thank you. I thought the Famous Gatsby for 2 seconds. Anyway, it works.
It
anyway,
does. It's not much alliteration though. Sorry.
That is true. And if anybody cares about alliteration, it's me. But besides that, there was this very interesting wave of art that came about. When these things entered into the commons, the copyright expired and so forth and so on, there was immediately a book that was definitely written already and was going to be released on the day the copyright expired.
Yeah, I saw
where
that.
It's just The Great Gatsby, but with cats. It's called The Great Gatsby. Yeah. And there's at least like, oh, and this is a rewriting of The Great Gatsby, but they're more explicitly gay. Or it's now erotica, or it's, you know, there was this really, this onslaught, this great avalanche of very interesting art.
Yeah.
And that is the closest thing I would say that is the closest we get to what I think is the potential, the inherent potential of mods.
Mm-hmm.
As in, my God, is it weird sometimes? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Oh, yeah. It's not always great.
Definitely not. But all in all, even in its uttermost banality of it, it is still an inherently good thing. And it shows that the Great Gatsby is still standing on a pedestal. It's still great. It's still fine. Or if you like that sort of book, I think it's whatever. But, you know, don't worry about that. My opinion is not important. But people do not think less about the book.
Yes, exactly.
That because it's now been augmented in so many weird shapes and forms, which is usually like the artistic defense of copyright. Anyway, if you want to listen to my more elaborate opinions on copyright, go listen to that episode we did on copyright with the lovely Library Punk.
Yay.
Anyway. Yay. But sorry, this is all to say. I'm sorry, Frank.
No, you're fine.
Like, even when that horror movie of Winnie the Pooh, like Blood and Honey, I believe, dropped, it didn't tarnish the childhood memory of Winnie the Pooh.
No.
In a way, it expanded it, maybe, but that's fine and something you as an adult should be able to deal with.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe don't show a very graphic horror movie to a child or something. That's sure. But, you know, it didn't do anything bad, even when it's weird. But, yeah, so we see this very interesting relationship to the sociological literary idea of hypertext.
Yes.
And how we can take that hypertext and build upon it, and the influence of certain texts within social interactions and perceptions of art. Mods are that, but once again, more radical, I would argue.
For sure.
And disoriented.
Oh yeah, they're chaotic, clearly.
They are, and forgive me for conceptualizing it as such, but they are very anarchistic in their character.
Yeah.
As in, there's no centralized anything with mods. It's a deeply democratic process.
Yes.
And I think, as someone who likes to analyze and do some data stuff every now and then, I think it's very interesting for me to see what people would like to see changed. And so on and so forth. It reflects a certain desire, or at the very least, a certain interest that a player base, once again, zooming back into video games, a player base might have for the text/game they have experienced.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think that's something that's very deeply valued to me. I was going to stop monologuing here.
No, but I think that's a great way to put it. And I think I'm going to posit an example in a minute so that it becomes a little more grounded, and working through the example, it'll be easier in some sense, I think. But it is not just about, I want to make this better, or I want to add this, or I want to remove this. It is sometimes about, I want to fundamentally make this game another, or I want to add a strong element that makes this extra, or makes this something more. And in its I think it's as you put it right, Leon, in its anarchistic decentralization, it has a lot of potential. And you know, while there are a lot of terrible mods for every kind of game you can imagine, and I don't mean it's like, oh, they're weird or they're poorly made, mm-hmm. No, I mean conceptually terrible, despicable, and evil. That is a thing, unfortunately. Yes.
That is something we might get into a little bit later.
Or at some other point, because it's definitely a thing, and I have some trouble how to conceptualize or handle that in a philosophical or sociological sense. But that is a thing. Like, it will reflect horrible behavior, like terrible racist bigotry. That will happen.
Yeah. Well, that's indeed very interesting, because I would say the last thing I would then add on top of it is that mods sit at this very interesting intersection between the social and the individual.
Yes.
It's a social process, but how you interact with it is fiercely individual.
Yeah.
You pick the mods that you would like to see in your game.
Yes.
And then you pray to whatever god you pray to that it works. Because they are not officially supported.
No.
Or are they sometimes? We'll also get into
doubtful.
It. But but it's this very interesting, once again, to the last conceptualization I'll offer, I'm so sorry. But imagine painting a painting together, and if you don't like the certain stroke of paint that someone next to you is doing to the painting, it's just not there. And so that's what I mean with the inherent malleability of data that your game is generated from can create such, like, philosophically deeply interesting creations. That's what I'm trying to get at. And it's also a great distancing from authorial, the death of the author type thing. If you know what I mean?
No, I do. Like, because we're talking about mechanics and work, it's like, oh, what effect is this way that the game works functioning? Is this being altered? Is this being denied? I mean, I am gonna go out on a weird personal limb here and feel like most, not every, but most great mods are a good improv. They're a good set of yes and. They're not adversarial to its material. Sometimes, but not always. I feel like that's more the exception than the rule. Speaking of, you know, going into examples and whatnot, I feel like one of the first ones we can talk about, and you wrote about this, it's Skyrim.
Yeah, it's difficult to immediately talk about Bethesda because Bethesda Cinemax or whatever what's called. It's all owned by Microsoft now, so whatever. Microsoft Studio 5, formerly known as Cinemax Studios, is the owner of Bethesda Studios, who made games such as Fallout 3 and 4 and 76, the best Fallouts. Obviously, everybody agrees on that. Luckily, good for them. And the Elder Scrolls series, a series that I like as much as Fallout, only I do have a warmer relationship to the execution of some Elder Scrolls versus me not having any warm relationship with any of the executions of Fallout on Bethesda's part. So that's not the end of there. That's not mods. we will talk about those games another time.
Sure.
But yeah, I think Bethesda is one of those studios that has, for the longest time, foreshadowing alert, for the longest time has a, at the very least, passable relationship with mods and their mod community.
Yeah.
The Bethesda studio is, there's so much to say about it, so I'm going to try and be concise here.
Take your time.
They are a very unique studio because it's Bethesda, a lot of people say. And what does this mean? Well, mostly on PC, but generally everywhere, really. With relationship to mods, I'm going to focus on PC here just to make it more accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'll keep going on too long.
No, for sure.
It's it had a very well-documented reputation for releasing games in a state that is funny. A very interesting state, which nobody could call well optimized. So this is a deeply technical element. The writing is all there according to them, and or as good as it's going to get at least. And it's there, it's fine. But then usually the technical parts with like game soft locking crashes, so forth, so on.
It's what you'd also call unpolished.
Yeah. So anyway. So, but because there's something special to these games for a lot of people, which I will say, I will admit, by far the most impressive talent of Bethesda Studios is their attention to detail in their open worlds.
Yes.
Now, do I think all that is there in their open worlds is as meaningful and packs as much of a punch as it should? Well, go read that text I wrote if you want to know more about that. But I can nevertheless very much admire the technical achievement of its open worlds.
Yes.
Even though the technical part sometimes doesn't run very well. I know there's like an artist that painstakingly animated that bucket physics that I put on like the shop clerk's head
to rob whatever them reason. Fully.
For instance, yeah, for example. Anyway, it's so I deeply appreciate the labor that is on display from a technical aspect, even though the technical aspect does leave a lot of things to be desired. So there seems to be a quality to this that makes people love these games and create a community around them which generates modifications.
Yes.
I promise this will all be relevant. And the binding factor here is goodwill and interest
mm-hmm.
in the game that is being portrayed here. For instance, A Elder Scrolls, we talk about Skyrim a lot as like the modification king, as if you will, I believe the most mods ever created are for Skyrim by a landslide.
Really?
As of right now, one of the biggest hubs that you can access to download mods is called Nexus Mods. Not all games are present here. A very notable exclusion is the GTA games, for instance. Mm. We'll get into it in a little bit. I'll try to, at least. Would you like to guess which are the first three games that have the most downloads? So technically, they might have more. Other games might have more mods, but like has the biggest downloading community.
I mean, Skyrim, New Vegas.
It's number four.
Ah, close enough. What are the other two?
First one is Skyrim Special Edition with 4.1 billion downloads.
God damn.
And 60k mods, I believe. Then you have Skyrim, the normal version, the non-special edition.
Oh no.
With 69.5k mods, which might overlap with Skyrim Special Edition. So technically they're not unique mods. There isn't 120,000 mods.
Oh,
probably.
Let me guess. Is number three also Skyrim?
No. But normal Skyrim has 1.9 billion downloads. So together, they literally sit at 6 billion. Whoa. So Skyrim is just 6 billion downloads. That's almost the world population. Anyway, then number three is Fallout 4.
Yeah.
With 48,000 downloads and 1.4 billion, 48,000 mods and 1.4 billion downloads. Then number four, New Vegas. Number five, do you want to guess or should I just...
Go for it.
Okay, Cyberpunk. Our friend Cyberpunk.
Good old Cyberpunk.
Then Stardew Valley and a game that I actually like, Oblivion.
You don't like Stardew Valley? Sorry to interrupt everything.
No. I do like Stardew Valley, but from the Bethesda side of things.
Ah, okay.
I actually like Oblivion.
No fair.
I also like New Vegas, but that was Obsidian.
Yeah, exactly. Notably.
Then Fallout 3, Witcher 3, Baldur's Gate 3, a bunch of threes. Mount & Blade, Dragon Age Origins. Oh boy, Dragon Age Origins is in there. Monster Hunter, Blade & Sorcery, Morrowind, Starfield. Apparently. And Dragon Age Inquisition. That's really miraculous to see because both the Dragon Age games do not have good mod support.
They don't.
So that really shows you the dedication of that fan base.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is all not important, but just to give you an idea how broad of a thing this is. And Bethesda has tried to monetize those mods every now and then.
Yeah.
With utter failure. Like, this has never happened successfully.
Mm-mm.
And... they took, I don't know if they started it, but it was only a matter of time before big companies were like, oh, let's try to monetize this. And now they might not have been able to monetize mods, but they might be able to use the free labor, essentially, the unpaid labor of those modders into their video game.
Yeah.
So I believe Skyrim has community content bundles. And a bunch of other games do this as well, which is a nice way to say that we use the mods people that are not employed by us have made for us. Now, the relationship per video game and company differ, of course.
Yes.
And there are like stories about modders getting paid, and there are also a lot of stories about modders definitely not getting paid. For instance, late in the as of time of recording, we have the Battlefront re-release.
Yes.
Star Wars Battlefront game, which has recently reported, after promising they wouldn't steal from modders, they stole from modders. So, you know, we see that happening. So this is a good way to monetize, not monetize, but to profit off of labor.
Yeah.
You cannot monetize the mod, but what you can do is use that labor into your game and like enhance what you already have, which is what makes video games so interesting, because the experience of the piece of art is ongoing per update.
Yeah, exactly. It varies a bit, and it's not necessarily clear always when that's happening. Sometimes like, oh, it's this person's content pack for this game, and we hope they're being paid, but we don't know, because same company has also not paid mods and used their work. Yeah, it's... With any good things, capitalism will try to eat it all up. But it, not very successfully. What I do want to mention, you know, we're talking about Skyrim and how Skyrim it became expanded and notable because of its mods.
Oh, yeah.
But, and that, this, there's a kind of Schadenfreude here, a sort of pleasure from it, but not entirely. There's a sort of satisfaction to it that's like, yeah, no, I'm so glad this didn't work. Or at least not to, to their expectations. Because, you know, as Leon was saying, Bethesda has been not great at optimization and polish in their initial releases. And really, a lot of companies haven't been doing that, but Bethesda even more infamously so. And to the point where they sometimes... I think it's not always obvious, but it is clear that they depend or lean into modding work to help boost their game, to help make their game successful. And that was certainly in the cards, or hoping for, in the case of Starfield, their latest big game release. However, what became clear for a variety of reasons is that that wasn't cutting it. That wasn't going to work. And the reasons for that, there are technical reasons to the point where, you know, the game doesn't allow a certain level of modding, or just doesn't work, or there's stuff that you just can't mess with or can't change. And another point, which is like, there's not that much interesting to improve upon or to make it better. It's like, Starfield was disappointing in a way that didn't foster the level of community that previous Bethesda titles did, from a technical and, you know, a full product sense. And I think the key is that for the game to have a kind of modding success, there bloody needs to be something there in its original state that makes it compelling, that makes it involving, that makes it engaging. Just that the game existing, or the game, you know, being able to be modded, doesn't mean it's going to get a modding community. It needs to have something which will engage people, and engage people to the point where they want to engage with it so much, to the point that they will engage with its innards.
Definitely. What is unique for Bethesda, which is the last thing I'll say about it,
no, of course,
is that it is unique because precisely because it is so empty, and because it is so empty in so many ways, like meaningful narrative and quests and so forth and so on, the writing being subpar at times at best, it is literally, because of its broad open worlds, a canvas for you to build in.
Yeah.
And this has this beautiful open world that you can walk around in, and then you can like add little things to that as well, and like customize that experience, which is only facilitated through very big modding communities.
Yeah.
Which you have a bunch of modding communities, but Skyrim, like I just pointed out, with like a bunch of different mods, bunch of different additions, and billions of downloads, shows that there is like, you know, there's an interest in that.
Yeah.
And you can have passionate smaller communities, but then that is focused around like only a couple things. Whereas Skyrim, there are games made within Skyrim.
Yes.
And
literally.
There's literally. And then there are also mods that eventually grew out of Skyrim. So mods that started off as a Skyrim mod then turned into a standalone video game. Would you like to introduce that, or is that...
That is the incredible game, The Forgotten City, also sharing the title with the Skyrim mod, which the game expanded upon what was in the mod, its premise, its storyline, a relationship to a specific city, and a time loop mechanics, and, you know, built a separate story, context, and environment for it, to the point where it became a great and I think fairly successful separate game. And, you know, I feel like that is the kind of golden mean for video games, like that, you know, these people who are interested in the project, interested in doing something with this game, interested in learning about how to do it, they do it, create something special with it, and, you know, that's not necessarily the case, but, like, to the point where they go out and create their own separate games, right? Like, with what they've learned, with what they were doing. In this case, it's the same, kind of the same storyline, but even then, it's a whole separate game with a whole other stuff, and it is pretty special. It's pretty incredible. And I think it's what you were saying, right? Like, there's something about that open world which creates a space where that is positive, interesting, and desired, right? I think there's something about Skyrim, despite all its emptiness and all its original issues, that still make it compelling to play without mods. And I feel like if you don't have that, then nothing, then you can't say, mods cannot save a game. They can improve it, they can adapt it, they can elevate it in some sense, but they cannot give this kind of salvation. Because if it's that broken, if it is that weak, if it's that little engaging, then why? Then there's not going to be any drive to get there, to get to where, you know, having a large, strong, and interesting and varied modding community would get you.
Yeah, it can save the technical, but not the artistical, I would say.
And sometimes not even that.
Sometimes not even that, because why should they? And there was like this well-known, commonly addressed mod team that like was just like, we give up on Starfield. The game is kind of shit, actually. Lamau, peace. So that was like a very destructive relationship that Bethesda is now engaging with its own mod community, also because they work alongside each other. There was like this frame issue. Of course there was. There was this frame issue for Starfield that was fixed by modders and then was then also fixed by the development team of Starfield. And like, so they're working alongside each other. They're not like at least there was a lot of functionality for the days that Skyrim, Oblivion, and Fallout 3 were released in. The standard was just different.
Yeah.
The standard has risen quite a bit, and they still think they can adhere to the quality standard because we are Bethesda, right, Lamau? And
it ain't sure, cutting it anymore.
It's, well, I think people are... I should have looked up the sales numbers for Starfield. But whether or not those were successful, they weren't bad, I believe, but...
No.
Whether or not, I think there were a lot of polls being held, and the polls revealed, oh well, I'm a lot less excited for Elder Scrolls now.
Yeah.
Now, these are gamers. These are not people with good compulsion. They're going to buy Elder Scrolls 6. I don't believe for a second this is a meaningful data, but it does see. We do see how resentment is built, and when exactly. Resentment is built to a certain point, things can change. That's as simple as I'll keep it for now. There's a bunch of different things to get into here.
No, for sure.
To talk about another very interesting example of mods, the idea of mods becoming their own games is actually way older than Forgotten City. Sorry.
Really?
For example, Team Fortress was originally a Quake mod.
Oh, damn.
But Valve bought the people and hired the people. And, you know, that sounds wholesomer. Not wholesome, but wholesomer. than just clearly maintaining a predatory attitude towards free labor.
Yeah.
And we can get into how then those employees were treated within the company. And there's a lot of interesting stuff to say about that. I might link some articles, I don't know. But it's I'm trying to prevent becoming a curator for media, for other media, because there's so many interesting things I would like to share with you, dear listener. But at the same time, I don't know if that's appropriate or not. I don't know. But my point being here is that I believe Portal as well was also a mod studio, or not a mod studio, was also a group of modders. And,
well, and I know that Dota was like a Warcraft mod.
Yeah, so there you go. So Valve has been doing this thing very deliberately. And you would say, like, well, they recognize talent, right? And sure, that's something they did, to be sure. At the same time, and, you know, we can't go, well, we could, but we shall not go into how capitalism inherently functions, and therefore certain things about that are bad, man.
I think the simplest and clearest way for the point we're making, because then we're, and that's important, talking about the labor relationships and how those happen, but to the very first possible degree of any kind of ethical or positive behavior with, in that initial instance of like, oh, you're doing good work, let's bring your good work to the stuff we do together, and not just, oh, let me take all that for myself and thanks, bye.
Well, once again, this is where it's, they don't go thanks, bye, but they go, well, all your talent under my banner, which is how capitalism functions.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
exactly.
trying to get at. And this is like so unfortunate because, you know, it this way Valve eats talent in a way that I think is maybe not entirely kosher, let's just say that. This is not, you know. So one would think even on the service level, like, oh, that's a lot better, right? Well, you know, you're going to have to delve into that history a little bit if you want to get more solid answers out of that. But ultimately, power favors the biggest hierarchy. And, you know, Valve is very... it's a multi-billion dollar company. There you go. That's all I'll say about it. Owning the largest game store in the world will do that for you. owning Steam, that is, for those wondering. Anyway. Yeah, so that was that's a very interesting phenomenon, and it's been going on for quite some time.
Yeah.
It denies the fact that besides Valve, there could have been other interesting studio.
No, that's
like
true.
Like maybe the people working on that Quake mod could have developed themselves into that another studio.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case. Everything is concentrated under the banner of a bigger company. There is another big company that's a lot smaller than Bethesda, and especially a lot smaller than Valve, but a company that Frank and I play a lot of games from, called Paradox Interactive. And they are very open about it. They're like, here you go. Here are the modding tools. Here's modding support. We like modders. However, whatever you use or whatever you create with these tools, we own it. So, bad, but at least they're honest about it. So
better the devil you know, I guess.
Yeah, well, it at least it's like very clear, like, hey, we're going to use, if we want to use whatever you do, we're going to use whatever labor you generate. And we're going to be upfront about it. So that's at least less comeback-ish. Then again, they did recently take it very far with essentially taking a Star Trek mod for the game Stellaris and just releasing it as a standalone game. They changed some stuff. They changed some UI stuff. But a lot of people were like, hey, this seems really familiar. So... this shows you the once again the potentiality of mods that a literal Star Trek, like a very big franchise, can just, like, you know, your work is being absorbed into a huge franchise.
I mean,
on essentially a whim, like it happens very quickly, not on a whim, but like just like that is what I mean.
I mean, it's the thing that. Brings back that Library Punk episode, that fuck copyright, because, you know, the modders who actually made the Star Trek mod, they couldn't get the Star Trek license, but Paradox can. So Paradox can literally sell it as a Star Trek game because they have the power to do it. But you know, the actual people who did the fucking work can't. So you know,
I don't know. Maybe Paradox compensated these people.
We can hope. but it's still... Yeah,
but by far and large, the rule is they're not being compensated.
Yeah, no, it's...
They should be lucky if they get credited.
Yeah, it's a strong, strong doubt there. Strong doubt. There's another Rockstar game, which we'll probably never play. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, so, and then there's the final example. The final negative example that is indeed, like you said, Rockstar.
Yeah.
Who used to have titles like GTA San Andreas, who had an insane mod community, and GTA 4, not Skyrim levels, but you know, it was big, and they had their own forums for it, and so on. And they had like this whole broad infrastructure for GTA games, and now Rockstar is functioning in a way because they kind of profit off of it. And the way that mod community is functioning actually threatens profit models.
Yeah.
How so? Well, a while ago, you might remember Rockstar releasing a very interesting set of definitive editions for three games, San Andreas, Vice City, and GTA 3. And that didn't go over well. So there are mods that do that way better. But because of that, now that they have released the definitive versions of those games, they are taking down mods with cease and desists. How the fuck do you do that? Because you're not earning any money off of it. Well, Rockstar is extremely litigious. And they, I don't know, for a group of people who just sometimes work on a thing, they are not going to generate any kind of like lawyer capacity that can topple Rockstar's multi-billion-dollar enterprises. So this is a very corrosive relationship with your own modding community, because the modding community is, in this case, like, I bought GTA way back. I bought GTA 4 way back because I was like, well, let's try out those mods. That's literally why I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like 12 years ago at this point. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But when I first started playing on a PC, I was like, oh, let's buy a bunch of those games that have big mods because I'm curious what that's all about. And with Skyrim, it was no problem. Or Fallout. But the Rockstar one, first off, had their own forums, their own thing, and like, oh, this is difficult. And then someone explained to me that with GTA 5, for example, you do not own the game. Even when you buy it on disc, you do not own the game. You own a lifetime license to play the game. And do you notice a very functional difference in it? Well, no. Up to the point you accidentally load up the game with mods active without disabling the online element of it. And you have to just like boot the game differently, because otherwise Rockstar gets like a ping, like, oh, this person is playing with an alternate data set, which is what mods are. They change the data of your game. And when that ping goes off, you just get banned from online. GTA Online, which you might have sunken hundreds of bucks into. You forgot that you had mods active? Fuck you. You're banned. And they suspend your license to play that game, essentially. I don't know if you probably can still play single player, but still, it's because that structure is there, speaking from a legal point of view, you literally, you know, lose half, or depending on how your enjoyment works of the game, you lose a large segment of that game that you paid for.
Yeah.
And maybe then continue to pay it for. So yeah, that's all. That's
fucking very bad, capitalism. Very bad.
Yeah, sorry to like be that those type of podcasters again, but essentially
we always were.
Yeah. Essentially this is like this is a very hostile way a company can position itself when we clearly see the fruits of mods.
Yeah.
Like, it's never a bad thing. That's the problem. You can play the game without mods. Like, it's a lot easier to just install the game.
Yeah.
It's easy. So it's definitely not a required element. So it's never a bad thing to have mods, period.
No. I mean, we haven't talked about it yet, but the other big obvious example is Minecraft. Minecraft has grown to what it was and is because of a strong modding community that it was willing to engage with it when it was even worse optimized. When it didn't have a modding API, which is a part of the structure that helps, you know, have like modding tools and, you know, interfaces for certain things. I don't know, a technical level, which is beyond me yet. But so the point was like, there had been strong modding community for a while. There still weren't those tools. And it was clear how mods were important. And that was, you know, that was a relationship of actively like ignoring the key elements of the game. But like, mods can have such a strong positive effect on a game and can have like a really positive attitude towards the video game, right? Like where they actively like improve upon it, as like, as I framed it earlier, as like a yes and. I mean, to give some interesting examples of games we've spoken about before, Knights of the Old Republic, especially the second one, the recommended, in terms of community-wise, version for you to play the game is with mods, is with the restored content mod. And what that is like, because it is an Obsidian game, and it's a trend with Obsidian games, the other one is Fallout New Vegas, where this also happens quite a bit, there's a lot of stuff which, you know, was kind of cut or unfinished, or it's like, you know, this was removed because there was no time, or et cetera, et cetera. And what the equivalent mods do, literally like recover that content, restructure it in a way that is cohesive with the game, and include it back in. So it's almost as like the director's cut was made by modders. And in the case of Fallout New Vegas, there is kind of a director's cut version, which is help from, I think he was the developer, Josh Sawyer, the J. Sawyer director's cut version of Fallout New Vegas, which is made possible by mods, not paid content, mods, people who did this work for free. And I think there's something so interesting, so positive about it. That's like, it's not like, and sometimes, you know, like there are mods which will strive and work against the game. Sometimes that is positive. A lot of the times that isn't, I think, but that's me. But when that works in tandem, like it's like, okay, this is what the game is doing. This is what the game's trying to achieve. How do I make it something else? How do I work upon it? Here there are some examples, and I'll leave one of them in the case of a Paradox game to Leon. But the one I want to mention, and it is it's a 12-year-old game at this point. It is Faster Than Light, FTL. It's this kind of strategy, roguelite kind of thing, where you have a ship, you need to go to the end, and you know, you fight increasingly more difficult enemies, and you upgrade your ship and whatnot. I feel like it's a very odd Star Trek simulator kind of thing in a tactical side. And what did there was a modding community for a time. The mod itself wasn't necessarily positive. It had issues. It's from like taking output from other people and not crediting it, those kinds of things, and weird choices in terms of balance and story. But then comes along, and this mod is a couple years old at this point, still getting updated, called Faster Than Light Multiverse, which is effectively FTL2, because it takes the story, the mechanics, all of that, and very much goes, yes, and builds upon it in interesting ways with other species of aliens, other kinds of weaponry, a developed story that goes beyond the original scope. It has the whole multiverse thing in a really weird and fun way. And you know, it's not trying to like, oh, this is the better FTL. It's like, no, it is another experience on top of it. That's why I frame it. Like, it is FTL 2, like, hands down. Like, it is like the sequel to that game in terms of scope, in terms of gameplay, in terms of story. I think it is like the kind of gold standard for modding. And again, it is a team of people who've been doing this for years because they love the game. There's something so incredibly fun and interesting about this. And then we're talking about a 12-year-old game at this point, and they're still interested, still engaged in it. There's an active Discord server, which I'm a part of, and is a thing. And you know what's another cool thing about this mod? It's very queer-friendly. So it's only positive points, honestly. I have a lot of love for FTL and almost as much love for this mod. And I think it's that kind of thing where it is fit. And I think it is what a great modding community can be, which is like, oh, there's this thing which we love and this thing we want to make it our own as well and add our own to it, our own tastes, our own enjoyments, our own expansions to it. And so they did. It is, to me, modding, I think, to me, is one of the clearest examples of that kind of thing. Like, oh, people will do nothing without, you know, a profit incentive or a reward or whatever. It's like, here's an incredible amount of evidence to the contrary, because none of these people did it with any kind of direct return other than, let's make this art more fun, more interesting, more engaging, more weird, etc., etc., etc.
I love the work without profit incentive meme a lot, so especially because there are countless examples.
Oh, so many.
So, like, I guess you could say, like, oh, well, you can put it on your resume, okay, sure, whatever. But I don't think this is the primary goal of modders. It's an act of, you know, devotion up to a point.
Yeah.
That I think is much more interesting.
Oh, no, for sure. It is artistic. It is creative in its nature.
Yeah, and it is one of the most postmodernist activities you can ever do. Modding, in my
That's
opinion.
That's true. Nice.
So, you know, I guess that's something that it's so definitely so modern from that point of view. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It sometimes there's also, you know, just as an obligatory moral condemnation, there's also like a very odd, because it's so unregulated, because it's so anarchistic in its character, it cannot be regulated, and every attempt at regulation goes poorly.
Yeah.
And this is just also how the internet works in general, with sadly some very gross things being added into games and whatnot. And not so very gross, but very stupid looking.
Oh yeah.
Example of this was like the outcry on GTA San Andreas, because somebody added the sex mod into it. There were parents like, "Oh my god, there is sex in the video games!" Like, well, no, it's a third-party software patch. And they were like, "We don't understand what that is. You put sex in your video game, you are the devil." So that, you know, mostly Americans, of course. We Europeans didn't care, and it's just we really didn't. It was a moral. It's such an interesting point in video game history, because there's this moral outrage about a video game, a very particular one, I would say. And I think that's, you know, from a historical point of view, I think it's very interesting. But there are also, sadly, besides the sexual, which is totally fine by me, even though I'm not interested in it. Besides that, there's sadly also some things added that are just inherently problematic, inherently gross, inherently bad.
Oh, yeah.
I will not get into it, but it's just, but once again, this is how the internet functions. Where there's a group of people, you will create something, and community, you know, we always talk about it in a very complimentary, positive sense, and we will continue to do so. That doesn't mean that, like, very small communities, or just even large communities for that matter, it's not a thing in itself that is good. It is what is done through it.
Exactly.
And people, you know, I think when we talk about community and building community and, like, collective action and so forth and so on, it's always, once again, from a point of ideological view that we are very transparent about.
Yeah.
So for us, it's a very different reality. Whereas, you know, just a disclaimer then, I guess, like, yeah, of course, a thing like collective action is not always a good thing. Like, we like sincerity over here. But like I pointed out another time, you can be sincerely racist, for example.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's you know, these are all things that we should also apply to active labor from communities, collective action, whatever you want me to call it. I don't know. But it's, that also happens with mods. It happens with everything where stuff is created. There's a lot of bad fan fiction. There's a lot of...
A lot of bad books. A lot of bad books.
So
many.
Don't search book talk. Never mind. Anyway. So all very much something that we just have to quickly mention it.
Yeah,
I would say, like, my positive experience with mods was, like, the Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones mod for Crusader Kings, which allowed me to interact with the map of that world. And it literally taught me which noble house is situated where and who are these family members. Because the yeah. game allows you to interact with that. And suddenly, I knew who everyone was and where everyone was. Because that game relies upon which characters are where for quite a bit, for a lot of its intrigue, for a lot of its mechanics. And because of that, I was able to interact with a lot of conspiracy theories about the book, or conspiracy theories in the book, within the narrative of the book. And like, or just theories, I should say, not conspiracy theories, but a lot of fan theories about the book and analysis of the book was significantly enhanced by the fact that I had a fun tool to play with, which passively allowed me to increase my knowledge to such a steadfast point that I could achieve a better, more thorough understanding of the text. So this is like such a, you know, this I would say is for me like such a clear and deliberate like point of improvement that is just wholeheartedly positive, in my opinion.
No, for sure.
Anyway.
It is, it's as you've put it, right? There's a lot of people who will do horrendous stuff, not just the weird, strange stuff, like, I don't know, make y'all zombies in Left 4 Dead Dr. Zoidberg. But there'll be people who will make some horrendously racist shit. And no, that should not be tolerated. But it's something about creating art. But I think that that unfortunately, you know, where there are a lot of people involved, that there will be, unfortunately, there are racist people who will create terrible art or terrible art adjacent stuff. And however, I do think that mods are significant to talk about, because they are such a specific and unique kind of media. I'm not sure if we can call mods a media or a medium even, but they're an odd thing there that deserves some attention. And I do, you mentioned it at the very start, and there's definitely a lot there to think about, to consider, to analyze, to interpret in terms of culture, in terms of economics and politics and all that, but a history of mods, a history of modding. And the ramifications, the roots, the connections there, because, you know, it's at the end of the day, it is something quite cool about you engage in a kind of passion project that you can share with people so openly and so easily, and that, you know, that you build upon it and builds upon it, and like what started as one, two people working on something fun becomes a pretty literal dev team working on this mod that's growing and growing and becoming interesting and weirder and fun and strange, and a lot of people like it, and some people will support you to continue doing that, and I was just like, no, we'll do it. And it's like, there can be something beautiful and fascinating and interesting about modding that escapes a traditional capitalistic logic, even if it isn't always positive or always democratic or always anarchistic in its positive, fully positive sense. There is a lot there to think about, and when it's going interestingly or going positively, so much to think about, so much to consider, so much to enjoy. And yeah, I mean, I love mods ever since I've come across being able to both witness them in you know, watching videos and stuff, and playing them. It's a unique experience all on its own that knows no real comparison, despite our terrible efforts earlier on in the episode.
What was the game that you first modded?
Oh, damn. It might have been FTL, actually. It might have been Faster Than Light with the not great mod. Might have been that. I'd have to check my Steam list, but it's probably that. What was the first mod? Oh, the first game you modded, Leon?
Skyrim.
Ah. yeah, that's it's very fair. Very, almost obvious even.
Maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe Skyrim, maybe Knights of the Old Republic too.
Oh, interesting. No, that makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think in my case it was probably FTL. Because, like, by then I had modded other stuff when I played other games and whatnot, but that was probably my first. Nice.
Yeah, I would like to sum it up by, based on what you said, like, for me, mods are such an interesting expression of people negotiating their meaningfulness with art.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's a direct expression of that, mainly that, sure, there is the intersection of memes and so forth and so on, and things to not be taken seriously as a quote-unquote canon experience or a sincere experience.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, the fact that the game becomes a canvas for memes alongside a more serious set of modifications is exactly, like I said earlier, like it is the most postmodernist activity within media, and by a landslide, I would say, and mainly because it has all these points of intersection as well, from technical, artistical, etc., the things that we have been saying quite a bit now. It's so, yeah, I find mods such a deeply interesting a point of view to witness people's conceptualization of the game / art, and to view that through that paradigm is like just endlessly fascinating to me, and you know, like I said, has enhanced my understanding of quite a couple of things, I would argue. So yeah, I think mods are so essential to video games, and it's literally the reason why I even bothered getting a PC game, a gaming PC, because, you know, otherwise I might have just, you know, I don't get it. I might just play on console. Otherwise, I don't get it. So yeah, that's it. That's that for me. That's what mods represent to me, or to us.
Yeah, no, I completely endorse all of that.
Thank you.
No, for sure.
So if there was nothing else, I don't know if you have anything to say.
I'm good. I've said my piece. it's the kind of thing which we are really involved about and think a lot about, and it's nice to have a space for it to, you know, put it in our place of thinking about things.
Definitely. Thank you so much for listening, dear listener.
For sure.
Let us know what's your favorite mod.
Oh, yeah, please do.
If you feel like it, but don't feel obligated. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find us at patreon.com/leftpage. I'm going to, once again, very politely ask if you can just follow us there. That would be great as well. You don't have to support us.
Oh, yeah.
But we have some texts coming up that are going to be available to everyone that I think are very interesting. And just check it out if you can. Or don't. I don't know. But we would appreciate it.
Oh,